This is the Why We Travel podcast, the podcast dedicated to those who want to explore the world on their terms. Each week, you'll hear from amazing travelers and experts sharing their best travel stories from the road. Listen to their unique travel experiences and get insider tips about their favorite destinations. Whether you're an experienced world nomad or just getting started, this podcast will inspire you, improve your travel skills, change the way you travel, and motivate you to get out and see the world. Discover the art of independent travel and meet fellow travelers in our online community. Now, let's get into it with your host and world traveler, Claus Lauder. Welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Why We Travel podcast. Today it will take us south, far south, the furthest south you can go. We actually will go to Antarctica. So therefore, I have someone with me, obviously, who has been there and can tell us a little bit more on how it is to be in Antarctica. Caitlin Lubas became a published author at the age of 23 after writing about her experience visiting over 70 countries, all seven continents during college. Caitlin aims to inspire a community of international, intentional, substantially minded travelers seeking authentic experience and making the world a better place through increased cultural exchange. So let's say hello to Caitlin. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the podcast. Super excited to share my unique experience of having been to Antarctica.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on the show. Now, Antarctica obviously is not a place where many people go. But before we go into this, I want to know from you or learn from you, what was your very first memory in being on a journey, on a trip, being a traveler?
Like my first experience with traveling ever?
Ever.
I honestly can't remember the first trip that I went on. Like, I was really lucky that when I was little, my parents took me on a lot of trips with them. I grew up definitely in a family that appreciated travel. Like my dad's dad had been a travel agent. So they had been on a lot of trips growing up. And I think it's ingrained in my blood to be a traveler. So I think the actual first trip that I remember with my family was probably something domestic within the US, but I think the first formative trip that I took as an adult was definitely going to Ghana with my school. We actually were working with a village in Ghana. We were doing some volunteer work as well as helping them start a nonprofit and teaching women how to run their own business. And I think that was definitely the most culturally different experience that I've had that really made me feel connected to people on a different side of the planet and made me really have this itch to always want to be in different environments, meeting new people, experiencing wildly different things that I would never experience at home.
Okay, sounds great. Now, talking about faraway places, you can't go further than Antarctica. So it's really far away. I almost made it there. Only almost. You were there. So tell me a little bit, how came Antarctica on your travel list? What was the drive there?
Yeah. So actually this same Ghana trip that I just mentioned, it was my first trip during college and I just had a self-set goal to finish seeing all seven continents after that trip. I was sitting in this mud hut in Africa, like listening to the crickets outside of my tent and just thinking like, I had never imagined that I would be out here sleeping in a small little village in the middle of Ghana. I want to have more experiences like this. I just set a goal for myself that I wanted to be able to visit all seven continents by the end of my 3.5 years in college. So I just worked on that goal, saved up the money, did all the logistics planning. Like even when you plan a trip to Antarctica, there's very few spots because it's not a very popular tourist destination yet. There actually are a decent amount of people who want to do it as like a bucket list type of experience. So we had to book it like over a year in advance. Definitely saved up over a bunch of years because it is quite an expensive trip, but got on my radar around like 3 years in advance and worked up to actually planning it, saving for it, booking the whole thing. And then once I had graduated college, this was basically my first trip post-college, kind of like graduation present to myself of like, I'm going to start my adult life basically by visiting Antarctica, having this experience and just being able to hopefully learn a lot from it.
Okay, that's not a bad start. Now you said a little bit of traveling or quite a bit of planning was involved in there. So tell me a little bit on how you got started with this and the different steps that you needed to go through to make it work.
Definitely just started with a Google search, like how do you get to Antarctica? I think most people are not even aware of the fact that one, people do visit Antarctica. It's not only like researchers down there. So did the research, figured out there's a couple of different ways you can get there. Most common way is by boat. There's a lot of companies that have cruise ships, but nothing like the 1,000-people cruise ships that people generally think of when you think of a cruise. They're boats that fit like anywhere from 100 to 200 people, so very small crowd, relatively. You take the boats either from the tip of Argentina, which is a southernmost city in the world called Ushuaia, or the tip of Chile, and you can take those boats across the Drake Passage to get to the Antarctic Peninsula. And the Drake Passage, as I did more research, is this very tumultuous, most dangerous, most prone to seasickness type of part of the ocean. So it's definitely not for the faint of heart or for those who get seasick really easily. Like, I don't generally get seasick. I've been on a lot of like typical cruises before in my life with my family. And even on this cruise, like, I got very nauseous just being in that water. It was super rocky all over the place. Sometimes the waves can be up to 40 feet tall and the boat will be completely tipping sideways and like plates and glasses will be flying off the table. So I think doing the research and mentally preparing yourself for that part of the journey is a huge part of it. Like, I thoroughly would not recommend the trip to anyone who actually does get seasick, even just on like a normal boat. There is a different option. You can fly to Antarctica if you really desire to. It's definitely way more expensive. There is a little like landing strip for small planes to actually land on the continent. And those flights take off from, again, like the southern tip of South America. I ended up just deciding to go the boat route because it's definitely the more typical and more affordable route. And I hadn't had a history of seasickness, so I figured it'd be the better option for me. But yeah, just doing the research of like whether you want to leave from like the Chilean side or the Argentinian side, figuring out whether you want to do the boat route, the flight route, and then looking through the different tour operators or companies that run these small cruise ships from South America to Antarctica, kind of worked through all of that. I ended up going with a cruise that employed a lot of people who are actual marine biologists or glaciologists or people who have a really thorough background to be leading these Antarctic expeditions, because I really wanted to be learning as much as possible, not just there to check something off a bucket list, but really to feel like I experienced and learned a lot. So I ended up going with Oceanwide Expeditions for that reason, because I did a lot of research and found that their staff was checking all those boxes for me of this would be a learning focused type of trip. And it was really cool because we ended up having little lectures on the boat, like when we were in transit to get across the Drake Passage, which takes around 2 days to actually get from South America to the tip of Antarctica. We had all these little lectures about why are glaciers blue and like how to differentiate between different types of penguins. And we learned about citizen science projects, like how you can contribute to helping scientists count different penguins, or like how to submit pictures of whales that you find to help scientists be able to recognize different whales that you see around the world. So I definitely learned a lot. Those are all the kind of reasons I ended up picking this particular company and this particular route to get to Antarctica.
Okay, sounds great. Yeah, definitely more of an expedition or adventure style journey than just your holiday maker's destination. When it comes to the pricing, and I have been to Ushuaia, and I will tell you in a second what kind of mistake I made. But when it comes to pricing, as you said, it's not very affordable. It's more of a luxurious thing to get there. Give me a bit of an idea. How is that structured?
The general pricing, it depends, of course, like how many people you're trying to go with. Like, I ended up going with my dad, which was nice. We were able to share like a room for two people. If you're going with three people, you can split the cost a little bit more. If you're going as a solo person, obviously you can either book a room just for yourself, or I think a lot of the cruises let you sign up as a solo traveler and you'll be put in a room with random people to split the cost again. For like sharing a room of two, it ended up being, I think, around $9,000 per person, which is obviously a lot of money for a 10-day cruise. But when you really think about it, like, some people spend hundreds, if not $1,000 a night on like a very luxurious hotel. So for me to do an experience like this that I knew was going to be something I remember for the rest of my life, and there's just no other way to fully have an experience of seeing Antarctica, seeing the penguins, the whales, the seals, like, it definitely felt worth it for me. And I do think two other big expenses that people might not initially factor in are you need travel insurance because you are super far away from hospitals or doctors. And if anything goes wrong while you're in the middle of the ocean or like in Antarctica, they're going to have to charter a helicopter to pick you up and take you back. So the health insurance and just travel insurance alone was like another $1,000. And then for me, being based at the time in the New York City area, the flight itself to Ushuaia was like another $1,000 or so. So definitely a very pricey trip for around 2 weeks, but I could not recommend it more. Not one part of me felt like it wasn't worth it.
Oh, good tip there. And again, it's very far away. People might underestimate how far south Ushuaia is. If you look on a map, it does not really show you really how long it takes to get there. Now, the mistake I just throw in, which we did when we were there, we didn't book in advance. We were looking for last minute tickets. Now, What actually came out is there's tons of people doing exactly that. And there's only limited cancellations. So what happens there, interesting, is that usually would think that a last minute ticket is cheaper. No, it was double the price than the normal price because the demand was just so high that the price went through the roof. What you did is the right way, plan well in advance and secure your place on one of these vessels, one of these ships, and then go from there.
Some people were successful with last minute bookings. I think it depends on the time of the year, like Antarctic cruising season, like the only time where it's actually able to get the boats through the water and there's not too much ice is around, I think, like late November through early March. I went around Christmas, New Year's time just because it was the easiest for my dad to be able to get time off of work and come with me. And there was definitely not going to be any available spots on a boat at that time of year because it's peak season. But I think if you tried to go in that really early part of the season or the very end, you probably could get lucky. Like I had definitely read a blog post from someone who said she did just fly down to Ushuaia at one of those kind of shoulder season times of year. And she was able to get on the cruise for around like $5,000, which is about half the cost. So it really just depends. And I'm sorry that you had that experience. It didn't work out for you.
No worries. We were there end of February and it was still very busy there. So didn't really work out. Again, if you want to make sure you get there, then you should plan in advance and not trying to wing it as we did. Yeah. Now, what I like that you said that you basically become very well educated about the place. And I thought obviously that helps in promoting the diversity and how sensitive this place is in a global perspective. And you become an ambassador of that. Now, being on the continent itself, how did that work?
Yeah, so I think one big misconception is that like you visit Antarctica and staying on the continent, you're not allowed to. Like there's no hotels or anything. Like you're sleeping on the boat. That is your place that you stay, and you more make like daily expeditions to go ashore in different locations. So beyond the 2 days it took to sail from Ushuaia to Antarctica, we had around like 6-7 days of full exploration. So we'd have like a place we docked near in the morning, and you have the boat docked offshore. You have little Zodiac boats, they were called, that you get on to get from the large boat to the shore. And you'd have one group of people around like half the ship on shore at one time. And then you would switch and the other group would be like just going around in the Zodiac boats, looking at the icebergs, trying to spot whales and seals, so that there's never really more than 50 people on the actual continent at one time. Reduce the overall human impact. Like they were really, really thorough about telling us like you have to rinse your boots before you go in and out of the ship. Like we don't want any human germs or bacteria or just like any traces to be left. And I think they did a really good job of promoting that. So we would have like these morning expeditions, then the boat would move around to a different location, have an afternoon expedition. And we got to see a bunch of different places all around the different sides of the Antarctic Peninsula over that course of 6-7 days. But you do sleep on the boat, you go to the bathroom on the boat, like you keep all of your daily functions on the boat, and you make little trips to the land to keep it preserved. And you just being like a very conscious visitor, like even if we had a path with a lot of footprints, they would put all the snow back to make it look more natural before we left, which is something I've never really thought about doing before, but they do a really good job of keeping it extremely untouched, like leave not even footprints, I think was a really good motto that they had. And I actually had the experience of going camping in Antarctica. Oceanwide Expeditions offered this opportunity to have an actual stay on the continent overnight in a sleeping bag. And we don't even use tents. You actually dig a little burrow in the snow and you put a Gore-Tex like very waterproof sleeping bag into that little burrow. You're blocked off from the wind, and the snow actually insulates the heat from your body. So you'd think it'd be cold, but I was actually like super hot and ended up taking off layers when I slept outside in the snow, like under the midnight sun in Antarctica. And that was my experience actually like staying on the continent of Antarctica. So that's like pretty much the only way you can do it. There's not a resort or a hotel or anything of that sort physically established on the land. I think for tourists, if you're not like a scientist of some sort, the only sort of building that you'd ever be visiting is there is one port that has actually like a post office that you can send letters from. And it takes something like 3 to 6 months to ever arrive at its destination, but it will get there eventually.
Okay, now that sounds amazing. Now, when it comes to equipment, what do you need to bring with yourself, or do they provide equipment for you? Because obviously it's very cold there and you need to be dressed up in the right way.
Definitely cold. You do need a good parka, a good set of like waterproof boots. I was able to rent all of that through the company that I went with because I actually was traveling all around Argentina before and after this Antarctica trip. So I was not about to bring like a giant winter jacket when I was going to be in like Buenos Aires and up by Brazil. Definitely would have no need for a huge jacket like that. I think it was only like $100 or $200 to rent the gear. And that ended up being a much easier option to just like rent snow pants, rent the jacket, get the waterproof boots that are necessary to be walking around in the snow. So I think that's usually what people did. But I did see other people on my trip who just brought their winter gear and that was fine for them. But it actually is not as cold as you would possibly expect. Like at the time of year that I went, around like late December, early January, even with the wind chill, it would only be in like the low single digits degrees Fahrenheit, which honestly, like New York City can be colder than that at times. And I would walk around in New York just to get from place to place. So being outside in Antarctica at that time can honestly be warmer than New York City just because it's like summer at that time in the Southern Hemisphere, even though it's winter up north. So that was one misconception, I guess. I thought it was going to be absolutely freezing, like miserable to be outside, but it actually was pretty nice.
Okay. Now we talked about all the technologies and how to get there and what you need. Now, how was your impression once you were there? So more from the emotional side, what was the impression that you got there?
I think it's hard to prepare yourself for even what to expect when you arrive at a place that is so distant. Like for context, we also had pretty much no cell service for the entirety of those 10 days. And I think even that experience alone is something that most people haven't gone through. Like when is the last time anyone hasn't received a text message or checked their email or checked the news for that length of time? I think that was one experience in itself. But even then, just realizing like, I am as far from home and anyone that I know that I possibly ever will be, like I could not be in a more remote place. It's just a humbling experience to realize that you can deeply connect with nature and just really, I don't know, be self-sufficient in a place that humans don't even normally like venture to or are able to survive. I enjoyed that feeling. And I think along with the talks that we had about like the nature and people telling us more about the glaciers and the local kind of populations of penguins and seals and whales, like I just felt like I emerged from that trip really having a strong desire to protect nature and really just valuing it more in my life, because you get to see these untouched parts of the world, you realize this is what it used to be like before anything was ever developed. And there's so few places that are still so pristine like that. So getting to experience that does transform you into this Antarctic ambassador. And they even gave us a full talk about why you should care about Antarctica, why you should tell people to care about it. And even there's a lot of countries that are trying to drill for oil in Antarctica. And there's a lot of petitions and treaties trying to protect it. And just, I had never known any of this before. And I think now that I am aware of one, how beautiful it is, two, how untouched it is and how rare that is in our world today, I think I emerged from all of that just like caring so deeply about the environment and even just the emotional aspect of seeing glaciers all around you. I had been to Alaska before, I'd been to Iceland before, and I did find that I had this inclination for loving kind of glacial landscapes and just the deep blues of icebergs and getting to hear like ice fall into the water and like calving and everything has always been a really special experience for me. But being in a place like Antarctica where that is the only thing you can see, like there's no other landscape, it really is the closest I've ever felt to feeling like I was on another planet, like completely immersed in landscapes and scenery that you just do not come across in normal life ever. It was definitely an experience that makes you feel very small, makes you feel very appreciative. The emotional experience was very humbling and fulfilling.
Okay, great. So now you were obviously in a lot of countries in a young age, 70 countries, all 7 continents, and you want to inspire and give a bit of this experience to other people. So you have written a book. Tell me a little bit about this.
Yeah, I decided to write a book about my travel experiences because I found that I had a lot of these stories from my trips that people would always ask ask about, or I would always end up telling kind of the same things about. And I just wanted to write them down to be able to share them in a more scalable way, like being able to just share my story and give people an insight into what is it like to live in Southeast Asia for a few months, or spend some time in Abu Dhabi as a woman, or venture around Antarctica, East Africa. I ended up putting all these stories into a book. And my main goal with each of the short stories within my book is to share how a specific place can really have a profound impact on you as a person. I think there's a lot of books out there around travel that talk about the culture and how to visit a place and kind of more like travel guides or like informative about a place. But I really wanted to focus on sharing examples of how a place can really affect you, which is why I called the book title, You Are Where You Go. It's like a traveler's version of You Are Where You Eat. And I really think it's true that every place you go tends to shape you and become part of you and just forms a kind of puzzle piece within you and your personal journey of growing and developing and learning not only about the world around you, but also about yourself through the lens of different places, and realizing what's normal in one place might be very different than what you consider normal back home. Learning different perspectives, appreciating different cultures and values. And that's basically what the book is about. And it's been a really great opportunity to share those stories, hear from people all around the world, how they either strongly relate to the fact that a certain place has really shaped them, or it's inspiring them to go take a trip and kind of have one of those transformative travel experiences.
No, very wise word. Every journey, every trip, and I have been to a ton of countries as well, you always come back slightly different than when you left before. Everything, mm-hmm. Every trip leaves a sort of imprint on you and hopefully makes you a better person. So where can people find out more about you, and where can they get the book?
Yeah, the book is available worldwide on Amazon. It's also on Barnes & Noble. Or if you ever want to order directly a signed copy, you can hit me up on Instagram. My Instagram is just Caitlin Lubas. That's spelled CaitlinLubas. And yeah, I tend to do little speaking engagements here and there about my book. Like, I'm trying to really spread it through different schools and on podcasts like this. Like, I love sharing my story, especially from a perspective of a young person who's traveled a lot. I think that's quite unique, and I'm always happy to talk more about travel.
Okay, very final last question. What's the next travel journey? Where's the next goal?
I am actually heading to Mexico next Friday to fly into Mexico City and then eventually get to Oaxaca to celebrate Day of the Dead, or Dia de los Muertos. I'm very excited for that cultural experience, to experience a holiday in a different country, and especially all of the local food in Oaxaca. I am super excited.
That sounds absolutely great. I wish you a very good trip there. And thanks for your time on the podcast today, and talk soon.
Thank you as well. Bye.
Hey, Klaus here. Before you leave, I have a question. Are you a traveler? Do you have a favorite travel destination or favorite travel experiences that you would like to share with the world? Then become a guest on the Why We Travel podcast. Simply message me and I will get you all the details for becoming interview guest. And then we take it from there. That's it for now. I see you in the next episode, and have a great day.